Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of the call. If you'd like to ask a question during that time, please press star followed by number one. Today's conference is being recorded. Any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Now I'd like to turn over the meeting to Maureen O'Leary. You may begin.
Thank you, Angela. Good morning, and thank you for joining us to hear NOAA's winter outlook for the United States. My name's Maureen O'Leary from NOAA Communications. If you have questions following the briefing, you can reach me at maureen.o'leary@noaa.gov and by phone on my cell phone at 202-578-5257. NOAA produces seasonal outlooks and the U.S. drought outlook to help communities prepare for what's likely to come in the next few months and minimize weather impacts on lives and livelihoods. Today's discussion will begin with brief remarks, and then we'll take questions from reporters only. A recording of this briefing will be available on NOAA.gov about an hour after the event ends. Delivering the U.S. Winter Outlook is Mike Halpert, Deputy Director of NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, which is based in College Park, Maryland. Mike is on the teams that develop the seasonal forecast and the El Nino Southern Oscillation Diagnostic Discussion. Here's Mike Halpert.
Thank you, Maureen. The National Weather Service plays an important role in helping the nation prepare for, respond to, and recover from extreme weather and climate events. Building a weather-ready and climate-smart nation is a collective effort to improve America's resilience to extreme weather and climate by empowering the public to make fast, smart, and life-saving decisions. The Winter Outlook is produced in order to give American communities the best possible scientific prediction of how we think the winter will shape up across the nation. CPC issues these seasonal forecasts so users can take risk and opportunities into account when making climate-sensitive decisions. This outlook supports everyone, from local and state governments in our effort to plan for public needs this winter, to large and small businesses as they plan for how this winter might impact transportation, market demand for their goods and services, and prices. The outlook is probabilistic in nature, meaning that the maps show those areas that are most likely to be warmer or colder than normal and wetter or drier. However, the nature of a probabilistic forecast means that other outcomes are always possible, just less likely. As opposed to last year, when a strong El Nino was present across the Pacific Ocean, sea surface temperatures across the Pacific have been slightly colder than average, hovering near the La Nina threshold. At this time, a La Nina watch is in effect, with about a 70% chance that it will be elevated to an advisory next month. Given the potential La Nina, it shouldn't be a surprise that both the temperature and precipitation outlooks are consistent with typical La Nina impacts. However, because there is still some uncertainty that La Nina will develop and persist through the winter, probabilities on the maps this year are fairly conservative, much lower than the probabilities assigned to the outlook last year. Heading into winter, the big story again this year is likely to be drought. Last year's El Nino didn't deliver the hoped-for drought-busting precipitation for Central and Southern California and the Southwest, and the winter forecast doesn't bode well for this region and many other areas around the nation currently experiencing drought. In fact, drought is likely to expand in parts of the Southeast, particularly along the Gulf Coast, and also develop in the Southern Plains. Specifically, the precipitation forecast favors below-average precipitation across the entire southern tier of the U.S. and in southern Alaska. Above-average precipitation is most likely in the northern Rockies, around the Great Lakes, in Hawaii, and in western Alaska. The rest of the country falls into what we call the equal chance category, meaning that there's not a strong enough climate signal in these regions to favor one category over another. This means that these areas have equal chances of above, near, or below average winter precipitation. With regards to temperature, last year was the warmest winter on record for the United States, so the odds strongly favor this year to be cooler. Specifically, the temperature outlook favors warmer than average temperatures across the southern U.S., extending northward through the central Rockies and in Hawaii. Above average temperatures are also favored in western and northern Alaska and in northern New England. In contrast, below average temperatures are most likely across the northern tier from Montana to western Michigan. The rest of the country falls in the equal chances category. With that, let me turn it back to Maureen to help moderate the question and answer session.
Thanks, Mike. Before we move to Q&A, I wanted to introduce David Miskus. David leads the Climate Prediction Center's Drought Outlook team and contributes to the weekly Drought Monitor. David Miskus will take drought-related questions, while Mike Halpert will focus on questions about the seasonal outlook. Operator, you can start the Q&A.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. Our first question comes from Seth Bornstein with AP. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you for doing this. Mike, you know, people like Judah Cohn, who are, you know, based theirs on Siberian snow cover, and others have a far different forecast than NOAA here. So is it fair to say that the prime driver behind your forecast is the La Nina, you know, the weak and fleeting La Nina that's developing? And the second part of this is what, as we've seen over the years, this Siberian snow cover indicator, I think last year you said you guys were looking into it more. How much do you think that, how well an indicator do you think that is? Thank you.
Sure. So the first part, as I mentioned during my remarks, certainly the La Nina plays a significant role. You know, we have a suite of products, not just that, although a lot of our climate models that also give us indicators are somewhat consistent with this forecast. To be honest, we've gone against the models across the northern tier of the U.S., where many of the models were really forecasting another winter, much like last year, that was really a notable absence of any below-average temperatures. Well, La Nina would favor colder conditions into the area across the northern plains. As far as Siberian snow cover, you know, it's certainly something that we're aware of. You know, from what we've looked at, some of the actual mechanisms, you know, they seem to be maybe a little bit challenged, and they're just not meeting the statistical significance that we look for. You can, just kind of as a reminder, you can sometimes get a correlation between two parameters, but it doesn't necessarily imply causation. So it doesn't mean that one is actually causing the other. A lot of times we'll see people will correlate two variables together, but it really doesn't mean that one is resulting in the other. You know, and as far as Siberian snow cover, I mean, the reality is that we've seen above average Siberian snow cover over the past X number of winters, I think X being at least 4 or 5. And certainly during those 4 or 5, we've seen a few cold winters, but we've also seen some very warm winters, including last year. So, you know, as far as what we look at and what we judge, that's something that maybe, in my own view, contributes some small degree of variance, but not really enough to be actionable on our forecast in our forecast process.
And if I could just follow up, if La Nina is the prime driver here among the suite of products, what is sort of like number 2 and 3 driver that explains the forecast? I mean, is it AO or persistence or just general anthropogenic warming?
Sure. You know, that's, I guess you go to the warming. A lot of times we do leverage trends quite heavily. Of course, the interesting thing is that for winters, other than a bit of a tilt towards above-average temperatures out west, trends have not been particularly strong in the central and eastern part of the nation. So, you know, it's, in some seasons that's not the case. In the winter, we really don't leverage that much. But we do look at some other statistical tools and dynamical models that kind of go into this forecast.
Thank you.
Next question comes from Brian Sullivan with Bloomberg News. Your line is open.
Thank you. I have two quick questions here. One is, you know, if the La Nina is weak, what impact does that have on your forecast? Does that throw you into more uncertainty or even bleed to possible differences from what your outlook is? And then the second thing is, in the matter of the drought, where do you think we're going to be at the end of this season and going into the spring?
Sure. I'll take the first part of that, then I'll turn it over to Dave for the drought question. Assuming that La Nina does develop, the expectations are strongly in favor of this being a weak event, so we've already taken that into account. And really, the way we take that into account is by having fairly low probabilities. If you look across the southern tier, the probabilities don't even reach 50% in the three-class system for above in much of the southeast. So there is certainly, as I've mentioned, in a probabilistic forecast, there's a chance of all three outcomes occurring, just with a lesser amounts than what we show on the map. So, if you have access to the maps at this point and you look in an area like North Carolina, where we have a slight tilt towards above average temperatures, but there still is a close to probably 25 or close to even 30% chance temperatures will be below average. That's certainly not a solution that we're ruling out.
For the second question, this is Dave Miskus here about the drought. We start out in the west. We think the above normal precipitation will occur in the northwestern portion of the area, so hence you may see the on the latest seasonal drought outlook that ends at the end of January, possible improvement in at least that northern half in the Pacific Northwest. As far down into central and southern California, they really don't get into their wet season until late January, February, and March, so right now we just have persistence through that area. But based upon the 1 and 3 month outlooks right now, it does have a tendency towards drier. So we definitely think that we're pretty confident that the drought will continue in central and southern California, maybe even into the southwest right now. As far as the southeast goes, there are very strong signals that the 1 and 3 month outlooks that it's going to be sub-medium precipitation and warmer than normal. So hence we have persistence or expansion of drought across much of the southeast into the southern plains and the Gulf Coast. But not to the Atlantic coast because they've had a couple of hurricanes and heavy rains there, so we don't have any development in that area. New England is a tough area to predict. For the last 12 months, we keep having precipitation outlooks, and it tends to have much less that actually occurs than what was forecast. But we do think the western portion or the northern portion of New England will show some improvement. Right now they're getting heavy rains. This is a good time for soil moisture recharge in the area because it's cooler temperatures, plants and vegetation is not growing now, so you don't have the evaporation demand. We think low along the coast there, the odds are not as good further to the west for drought improvement, so we put persistence along the coast of New England. So, and in the northern Rockies, we said there's also strong signal for above normal precipitation this winter, so we have some improvement in the northern Rockies and the northern high plains.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Joseph Martinez with NBC Universal.
Hi. In South Texas, we have had the most days above 100-degree temperatures, and I would like to know what is the outlook for this specific region's winter?
Well, we do strongly favor above-average temperatures this winter with between 50 and 60% chance. I think I can probably say confidently, though, you shouldn't see any days above 100 this winter.
As far as respect to drought, this is Dave Miskus. We do think the development of drought will occur in the northern and eastern and southeastern portions of Texas right now. It's been you've gone between drought and flooding here, back and forth, kind of extreme type of weather here. We think because it will be drier than normal during the wintertime and warmer than normal, we think some short-term drought will start occurring across, like I said, the eastern and northern portions of Texas where abnormal dryness already exists on the drought monitor map.
Okay. Our next question comes from Chris Doring with Gannett. Your line is open.
I'm looking at Iowa specifically here, and I see basically you have an equal chance of precipitation and temperatures for the state. And I wanted to see if you could explain like why that's the case. Is it sort of in this happy medium of the La Nina impact where you were talking about some parts of the country are warmer and some are colder? I mean, just can you kind of just walk me through that a little bit, please?
Yeah, if you look at the full suite of tools You know, you kind of do fall in the middle. You know, we obviously with what we've looked at favor the below just to your north and above just to the south. There always has to be a dividing line on these maps. I mean, and while the reality might not be that large a zone, to try to determine, you know, which areas are going to be cold and warm right next to each other, we would have very little success at doing that. So it just, you know, some years it works out that way, that the middle of the country is where the dividers are. Some years, I think last year, we were probably far more bullish towards warm across your area that worked out quite well. You know, each year is different, and we assess each specific outcome, you know, as the tools make themselves available to us.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Our next question comes from Andrea Thompson with Climate Central. Your line is open.
Hi, yes. I guess this might be more for Dave Miskus, but given that we didn't have, you know, kind of the blockbuster year hoped for, at least in Southern California last year, and there's not really a good indication how this winter will go, you know, where does that put us in terms of a timeline for this drought actually ending? Is it, you know, are we looking at probably definitely several more years?
Yeah, I would have to say at a minimum this winter is not looking good based on what we've seen so far. They're talking, you know, it's been 4 to 5 years in a row now that they've had below normal precipitation and above normal temperatures, especially Southern California. It was probably going to take a couple of wet winters in a row to really put a big dent into this drought here right now. It's, like I said, it's very deeply rooted now hydrologically, where not only the topsoil and the reservoirs are low, but into the subsoils too, where they're using wells to drain the water out of there. So, yeah, it's going to take a while. Probably said many, many years, and it's got to be above normal precipitation.
Right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Next question comes from Paul Gross with WDIV-TV. Your line is open.
Yeah, thanks again for giving us the opportunity to talk with you about this. Quick question. As I look ahead to a winter season, obviously ENSO, the phase and the strength is the primary driver. When we have a weak El Nino or a weak La Nina, I chart on a spreadsheet all sorts of other indices. Some of them have already been mentioned here on the calls, you know, NAO, AO, things like that. And I'm curious if you have identified or seen an analog year, another year where we've had kind of a similar set of phases for some of these other circulation patterns.
You know, we really don't rely on analogs very significantly. The main problem being we just don't have enough sample size to do that. I mean, if you're going to go through and look at say, we have 60 years of real good data for a lot of these types of atmospheric and oceanic indices, you know, if you pull out one or two, I would not make a forecast based on one or two other years. I mean, there's so much natural variability, so many things that we can't explain in the climate system. So analogs are really, you know, not something that we pay much attention to. I suspect some folks maybe have looked at, you know, 83, 84 as a year that went from a strong El Nino to not quite a La Nina. But to be honest, I couldn't tell you what happened that winter because I think even if we had enough cases, the climate is also changing as we sit here year to year. And you're talking that's 30-plus years ago. I don't think you'd be very successful issuing forecasts based on a couple of prior year analogs.
And that leads to one quick follow-up question, if I'm allowed, and that is, you just led into it, really, was the climate is changing. And as I look at charts of global temperatures for El Nino and La Nina years, the La Nina years are getting warmer, and those are typically cooler years relative to average for the planet. And the El Nino ones are, of course, you know, getting warmer and warmer. So does the change in the climate and the fact that the La Nina years are getting warmer, does that factor into the forecast somewhat?
No, again, not specifically. When we say that the La Ninas are getting warmer, I think we're looking globally. And, of course, you can have a lot of variability looking at the whole northern hemisphere, really the whole planet.
Right.
So the trends that we've seen, whether looking at La Nina, El Nino or not, over the U.S. for winter are actually very small other than out west where we've seen a bit of a tilt towards above average. So at this point, these type of trends aren't playing a big role, at least in the winter forecast. Now, some of the other seasons, I think spring in particular is a different story. But certainly for regarding winter, you know, we just haven't seen that. Trends really didn't play a big role this year in this outlook.
All right. Well, thanks very, very much. Again, appreciate you doing this.
Next question comes from Robert Creer with San Diego Union Tribune.
Hi. In 2010, 2011 was a La Nina year, and in San Diego, we ended up with 25% above normal precipitation. Last year, of course, was the biggest or close to the biggest El Nino ever, and we ended up with well below normal precipitation. I'm wondering if the models are being significantly adjusted because things don't seem to be behaving the way we traditionally thought they would, and, you know, what kind of adjustments are being made in the models?
Hey, Rob, this is Mike. Sorry I didn't get back to you yesterday, by the way.
No problem.
You know, that you highlight exactly why our outlooks are probabilistic, you know, because there is other things going on besides just El Nino or La Nina. I would hesitate to make great pronouncements on one or two, if you want to call them failed years, where the most likely outcome didn't happen back in 2010-11 and then this last year. The tilt towards below this year is as weak a tilt as we can do. We felt it justified, but just like last year when we favored wet and it was, you know, dry, you know, we're favoring dry. There's nothing that says this winter can't be wet in San Diego. You know, we'd like to be able to give you a concrete guarantee, but that's just not the way the climate system works.
Thanks, Mike.
Next question comes from Bryce Anderson with DTN AG News Omaha.
Yes, hello, gentlemen. Thank you for your comments today. I have a question regarding the La Nina watch and then the ending of the La Nina watch and then the restarting of the La Nina watch. Could you explain what went into that? Because looking over the temperatures and the SOI, Southern Oscillation Index values in the past several months, it didn't seem like there was a whole lot of change, and so I'm curious as to why the watch went to no watch and then back to a watch regarding La Nina.
Sure, this is Mike again. And what the question refers to is that we had issued a La Nina watch back sometime in the spring, and we had dropped it in September and then reissued it last week in October. Two reasons for dropping it in September, obviously in hindsight, not the right call, but the ocean had kind of relaxed a little bit back towards normal. We hadn't really seen much in the way of an atmospheric response. In particular, the low-level winds had been very normal for month after month. Probably the biggest factor in dropping the watch, though, in September was that all of the dynamical models that are generally pretty reliable in September were really driving the ocean back towards normal as we went through the fall into the winter. You know, of course, as soon as we did that, the next couple of weeks, the ocean got a little colder, the atmosphere started to cooperate. The next set of runs that we saw, in particular the model that we run here at the Weather Service, were significantly colder in their forecasts, implying that this event would continue. Hence, our probabilities favoring La Nina went up, and so we felt justified to issue the watch with, you know, as I said in the beginning, a 70% chance that we'll be upgrading again next month to an advisory. We'll have to see how that turns out.
If I could ask a follow-up, that has to do with this, you know, kind of back and forth that was presented. Is this an unusual scenario for the behavior of the equatorial Pacific?
You know, what it really highlights is the challenge in issuing these forecasts on the weaker type events. You know, we've seen this a number of times over the past 5 or 10 years. Every year isn't like last year when you get this very strong type event. We issued watches back in 2012 for El Nino, and folks might remember that one just never developed. Again, we got kind of to the threshold, The models were saying one thing, and they didn't happen, and I don't think that that's a problem that'll be solved anytime soon. I think the nature of the whole system is that these weaker events are going to continue to be a challenge for us.
Well, thank you.
Next question comes from Seth Borenstein with AP. Your line is open.
Yes, thank you. Mike, I guess more just to follow up on earlier stuff, is it fair to say sort of what you're looking at is not one of the more memorable winters overall? I mean, it's I think Dan Vergano was tweeting it as rather meh. And going back to what Judah Cohen was talking about is the return of the just even the phrase polar vortex. Do you see us talking a lot of polar vortex this winter?
You know, this might there's no real way to know that for sure in our thing. You know, as far as this being a memorable or not memorable winter, a lot of times winters are shaped by one or two extreme events, and our outlooks really don't say anything about an extreme event. You know, while last winter ended up to be the warmest winter on record, I'm sure a lot of folks in the D.C. area remember the one big blizzard we had in late January, and that's what made it a memorable event, probably more so than the warm winter that we had, although maybe out playing touch football on Christmas Day in short sleeves was memorable to some folks as well. Will this be a memorable winter? That's not really what our outlook is about, and it just isn't really something that we can really comment on.
And no idea about whether we'll see polar, the dreaded polar.
You know, will we see deliveries of cold air this winter? Well, you know, it's going to be winter. I mean, I would expect in a typical winter we will have some bouts of below average temperature. Will that become the highlight? Well, our outlooks, other than across the northern plains, don't favor that necessarily. But it certainly doesn't say that can't happen as well.
Okay. Thank you.
Question comes from Patricia Kitchen with Newsday. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks very much, everyone, for doing this. So we're very much interested in New York, the Long Island section of New York, and that's in the equal territory there. I'm wondering at what point do you expect that you might see enough factors develop so that there would be a tilt in one direction or another? Would that be with next month's update, or is there any sense of, well, once we get XYZ over with, then things may be clearer at that point?
Sure. This is Mike. It's possible. This is, and you do raise one point that I'd like to emphasize, is that this forecast will be updated one last time before winter. Again, it's always the third Thursday, so that's November 17th this year. Could we see a change in the Northeast? It's certainly possible. You know, I don't know. I suspect that where we might, on a seasonal basis, it's maybe going to stay equal chances. It might pay more to look at our shorter leads, things like the monthly and even our new experimental week 3 and week 4 outlooks. There we have the potential to leverage information that we don't know how will turn out on the seasonal basis, things like the Madden-Julian oscillation, things like potential, and I guess I don't want to get too scientific here, but sometimes, as the polar vortex was brought up, that actually is a transference of what's happening in the stratosphere. And while maybe we can't say anything about it on a seasonal basis, there are times we can say things about it on a monthly basis.
Okay, great. Thank you. And also, is there anything to say about drought on Long Island? It's severe.
This is Dave Miskus. Yeah. New England is a tough choice for drought forecasting. As Mike just said, it's tough enough to forecast temperatures and precipitation in a 1 to 3 month outlook. We're finding the same problem right now. The models consistently during the summer and fall were trying to show wetter than normal conditions, and it just never materialized. So this has been a pretty long, about a 1 year drought now that's going on in New England here, and we haven't really seen that persistence in a big wide area for a long time in this area.
Yeah,
so
right.
They're also very climatologically, they get equal precipitation during each month here. So you would think the next month, if they miss it 1 month, they're going to get wet next, but it hasn't seemed to happen.
Right.
So since there was no any real tilt either way to wet or dry for the coastal areas. We kept it in persistence. The improvement in the western areas of New England were due to the current conditions right now, the heavy rain forecast. We think it's a good time of the season now. It's cooler. There's not evaporation going on. So we think there will be some improvement at least on the short term, and that's what's showing on the map.
And so are you including, like, Long Island in that New England?
The coastal area, yeah. The coastal areas, we just
coastal,
kept
right,
the
okay, sure.
There was no
sure.
tilt either way, so we just kept the persistence.
Thank you so much.
Our next question comes from Ellen Lederman with Rhode Island Monthly Magazine.
Hi. Well, obviously, the name of my publication gives away the area that I'm interested in, very close to Long Island. But when I heard you talk about equal chances for drought and temperature, can that be described as like a coin flip at this point? I mean, because, you know, we had an extremely warm weather last winter. The winter before, we had the other end of the extreme with many, many big snowy events.
Sure. This is Mike, and the coin flip would be a great analogy if this was a two-class system. Since there's three outcomes, you need a three-sided coin. The analogy I like to use is a kind of a die that has, you know, two ones, two twos, and two threes. But you're right. You know, you flip it, and there's really no tilt towards anything, either above, near, or below average. So that's the correct interpretation of your area.
Well, you're not helping any of the people in Rhode Island figure out their snow budgets. I hope you can live with that.
Well, it is, you know, I'd rather do that than guess and lead them down the wrong path.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Annette Petriconi with WKXW.
Hi, everybody. Thanks so much for doing this. We really appreciate it. I'm from New Jersey 101.5, so we were interested in the outlook for New Jersey in regards to winter weather, temperatures, snowfall, anything that you can give. And also, as you know, of course, we're dealing with a drought here and whether or not that might lessen at all this winter.
Sure. This is Mike. Let me start with the first couple of pieces of that. As Rhode Island, you know, as a good chunk of the Northeast, both temperature and precipitation are equal chances. So we're not tilting the odds towards either a cold or a warm winter, kind of anything goes. The one thing I will say, you mentioned snow cover, and while not a forecast, because we don't at this time issue forecasts for snow, I will just throw out that historically in La Nina winters, we oftentimes do see less than average snowfall in the mid-Atlantic area. A lot of times the storm track is further to the north and to the west. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean we can't see above normal snow, but just historically the odds do favor less snow than normal.
Hey, this is Dave again. As I mentioned to the Rhode Island reporter and other Northeast questions, it looks like, again, New Jersey, as Mike just said, doesn't have any favorable odds either way. So we're keeping the New Jersey area in persistence, but like I said, this is the time of the year right now. If they do get, say, an unexpected nor'easter or heavy rain, it would really be beneficial to recharge the soil moisture. So, but we're not showing that right now in our forecast, so hence the persistence here. I really can't give any kind of guidance here since we don't have anything from the temperatures or precipitation.
And once again, to ask a question, please press star 1. Our next question comes from Peter Benright with San Francisco Chronicle.
Hi, thanks a lot. So it sounds a bit somewhat unclear what you're expecting. So could you go over again what you're expecting in California, and if this La Nina develops, what effect you might expect it to have, and do you think that it would make any dent at all on the drought?
Sure. This is Mike. Well, the outlook at this point for temperature favors above average temperatures pretty much over the entire state. Precip at this time not in the San Francisco area, but to the southern, say, third of the state, we slightly favor a drier than average winter, so obviously not what folks in California are looking for. Further to the north, you know, a lot of times when we deal with La Nina, we see a storm track that results in a lot of storminess into the Pacific Northwest. Question always then becomes how far south, and you know, do you get the good rains and snows into the northern part of California? Those are types of forecasts that on a seasonal basis are very challenging. You know, that's where kind of each storm system has its own environment that it enters, and to whether or not, you know, the storms are far enough to the south, assuming we see the pattern that we're favoring, whether that you get they get into San Francisco or whether things are further north up into Oregon or Washington, that becomes a storm-by-storm event.
Mm-hmm. Hi, this is Dave with about the drought. As far as California goes, the further north you go, it's looking better as far as improvement to the drought. They got a really heavy storm the last couple of days, last week, so that really helped moisten the topsoil moisture in the mountains in the northern portion of California and the northern Sierras, so that's a good base for it to build on for the rest of the winter at least. Unfortunately, the further south you go, it's been a longer-term drought. They haven't gotten much precip even in the last couple of winters. Our outlooks are kind of showing, you know, slight odds towards below normal precipitation, so it's looking, and San Francisco's right in the middle, unfortunately, where you have the improvement to the north and pretty much drought continuing in the south. The central portion of California is going to be tricky. We'll have to see how well the storm track comes in, how far south it goes, whether it falls as snow, or if it's warm, it falls as rain in the mountains this winter. Hopefully it'll be cold enough that it'll be snow and you'll have a good runoff in the springtime. So, like, unfortunately, San Francisco is right in that transitional area, but I said probably improvement in the northern areas and persistence in the south and in the middle. We have persistence right now, but we'll have to wait and see. Kind of uncertain there.
And I will add that our shorter-term outlooks, obviously before the winter, but I was looking at those before I came in, and at least the outlooks for next week were pretty bullish towards above-average precipitation, at least in central and northern California up
right into
the Pacific Northwest. So not yet in the winter, but certainly everything that falls before counts and helps.
Yeah, it's a good start to the wet season.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Operator, can you tell reporters how to ask questions again?
Yes. Once again, to ask a question, please press star followed by number one. Our next question comes from Kimberly Miller with Palm Beach Coast Reporter.
The numbers correctly. So if I say we have a greater than 40% chance in South Florida for drier weather, does that mean there's a 60% chance of normal weather?
No, this is Mike. These are three-class outlooks. So in an area that's white on the map, there's a one-third chance of any of the three categories, above, near, or below.
Okay.
So when you get to South Florida, so it's between 40 and 50% chance, so that means it's more likely to be dry and less likely to be wet. So and that middle area stays largely one-third. So if you look at where the 50% line is, the three probabilities would be 50% chance of below, 33% chance of near, and only 17% chance of above.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Next question comes from Brian Sullivan with Bloomberg News.
Again, I have two quick questions here. One is, Mike, you had said that you kind of overruled the models in terms of the northern tier. Why did you overrule the models, and what were the models telling you? And then the second question has to do with California, which is, with the warm pool coming back, what does that raise the chances that there'll be more storms of rain as opposed to snow in central and northern California?
Sure. You know, when I say overrule, it's funny, and maybe it'll prove to not be the right way to go, but when we look at what the models have been showing us really for the last number of months, there's been a notable absence of any favoring below average temperatures. And the reality is that, you know, I was looking back at this before this call, and we haven't had, the United States has not seen any significant cold on a monthly or seasonal time basis since the spring of 2015, so we're going on a year and a half. I don't think we've reached a new normal where all we see is warm, warm, warm. So at some point, you know, we should see colder than average weather. I mean, that's kind of the way weather and climate work. And given the typical La Nina push, assuming we see the tropical Pacific link into the North Pacific, that should favor below average temperatures. You know, the interesting part of this forecast for me was actually over Alaska, where you want to talk about trends favoring above. I mean, it's just month after month. When they get a day that's below average, it seems to be remarkable. And again, La Nina would strongly favor, in the past, would favor below average temperatures. We couldn't go that far because it's been, you know, well more than a couple of months or even a couple of years to see it cold in Alaska. So we went with equal chances over a good part of the state, but the La Nina composite would certainly favor below average. Of course, many of those La Nina events are well back in the historical record. As far as warm, you know, wet versus white type storms on the West Coast, you know, again, each storm that comes in kind of enters its own environment. That's something that we probably can't say much about. I mean, certainly you get high enough into the mountains out west. I think in the winter, they're pretty much snow. I mean, you get above 8, 9, 10,000 feet, they're going to be snow. I guess the question is it snowing at 5,000 feet? And again, that's going to be an event-by-event situation.
Thank you.
Next question comes from Leticia Juarez with ABC News.
My question actually had to do with Southern California, but it was probably already answered, and it had to do when you mentioned that La Nina would be pushing more snow to the west and to the north. I think you made it clear that Southern California is not going to be seeing any snow in their mountains this year, probably unlikely.
Well, you know, again, I wouldn't say it quite that extreme to say that they're not going to see any snow. I would say that the outlook favors more storminess to the north of Southern California, but you know the tilt in the odds is fairly subtle. So certainly we don't rule out that it could even be wet in Southern California this year. You know, again, as far as individual snow events, you know, you're again dealing with the variability that you see internal or what we call intra-seasonal, things that happen on a week-to-week basis. And certainly it would not surprise me to see some storminess. I mean, we're not forecasting zero rain or snow in Southern California this year. I mean, this is their wet time of year. I would certainly expect to see some periods, just we don't favor that to be the dominant pattern.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Steve Novak with New Jersey Advanced Media.
Hi guys. I was looking at the forecast for New Jersey and Pennsylvania specifically, and I know you guys addressed that in some previous questions. In some forecasts from other agencies that have already come out, it looked like that there was maybe an increased frequency of storms this year. With the kind of a toss-up on precipitation and temperature, it doesn't sound like you guys would agree with that. Is that correct?
Well, I would clarify one thing. When you said other agencies, I assume you're talking like other private sector type forecasts.
Yes.
Because I believe we're the only government agency. At least I hope we're the only government.
another weather prediction.
Yeah, no, that's fine. You know, our forecasts don't say that can't happen, and to be honest, we're not favoring dry in the Northeast either. We just don't view that what we're looking at gives us enough of an indication that we're going to favor more or less storminess. It's really a toss-up at this point.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Dave Meskis. For the drought outlook, we have improvement in the western portions of the Northeast. That's due to the current short-term forecast of heavy rain occurring there. Plus, also, we think the Great Lakes during the winter get very warm. It's been very warm waters there, and if you get a cold blast across there, it's some pretty heavy lake effect snows when cold air comes across those lakes, especially in the favored lake effect snow belts. So those areas will probably get hit pretty hard early in the season while the lakes are still unfrozen and a cold blast air comes across there. along the coast, we didn't have any, like I said, any kind of odds either way. So we just kept persistence in the seasonal drought outlook along the coast of New England.
Gotcha. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Erica Grove, WNBC-TV.
Okay, great. Hi, guys. I'm wondering if we're kind of having to recalibrate what is ENSO neutral, because we just had this super El Nino, quote-unquote. Now we're having a relatively weak La Nina. Now that Pacific oscillation has turned positive, it was negative basically since the last mega El Nino of 97-98, is maybe like ENSO neutral at a different level than it was in the past? Has there been any research or any kind of insight into that?
This is Mike. Certainly ENSO neutral is a valid state, and it happens, you know, if you look through the historical record, even the recent historical record, it's happened a number of times in the last few years. I mean, if you go back prior to last year, I think the last two or three winters and good chunks of those years, we were in ENSO neutral. As far as and I'm not sure if you're referring to when you mentioned the Pacific state, I don't know if you're referring to the Pacific decadal oscillation, maybe. I don't know. And that's actually been very positive over the past couple of years, and that's returned.
Yeah, the past couple of years, but it was negative from 97-98 onward until when it finally ended, that's when we've seen these global average temperature records. You know, I'm just wondering how much of an effect it's having, if it's affecting ENSO as well.
Well, you know, the PDO is fairly closely related to ENSO. You know, there's some school of thought that it's actually is related to decadal variability of ENSO. We know when we look at our records of ENSO over the past 50 or 60 years, there are some decades that we favor La Nina versus some that we favor El Nino. I don't think we've seen a change in that character, at least currently. Certainly, you know, the big events, you know, we've had big events just, you know, if you go back to the early 50s, maybe not quite as big as last year's in terms of how warm the ocean got, but there was certainly a big event in 57, 58, and 72, 73 was another strong event. So we've seen this, and interspersed through those, we've seen periods when we've had La Niñas. So I at this point, I don't think we've seen any change in the character of El Niño. Now, that could change as we go forward, but we haven't seen it yet.
All right. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Kimberly Miller with Palm Beach Coast Reporter.
Okay, sorry. Thanks again for taking my second question. And this is very basic 101, but could you explain what's happening in the equatorial Pacific that causes a La Nina, and then it's what that impact is on South Florida, like, I guess, as far as the jet stream? Is that what happens that impacts the jet stream?
Sure. That's kind of the easiest way to look at it. I mean, what goes on in the Pacific and El Nino and La Nina is a well-established, well-understood phenomena. I'm not going to get into all of the science behind that, but let's just say that it helps to even out the heat content of the Pacific Ocean over time. If you didn't have these type of events, the Western Pacific would warm continuously, and it becomes unsustainable. So that's kind of part of the regular cycle. As far as the links to the southeast, which is really where we see the strongest signals between both El Nino and La Nina, and while last winter didn't pan out as we had expected in California in the southwest, things were certainly wetter than average in the southeast, and that is really the robust signal. Mm-hmm. But generally, when we see either El Nino or La Nina, we disrupt the patterns of tropical rainfall. That then impacts the jet stream over the Pacific, and that then impacts what happens over the U.S. And so as far as the southeast, with El Nino, we typically shift the jet stream south and east so that we kind of see more storminess developing a lot of times in the Gulf that moves up the coast or off the coast. When we see La Nina, that storm track oftentimes shifts to the west a little bit, and it results in more storminess through the Tennessee and Ohio valleys, kind of leaving the southeast high and dry at times.
Thank you.
And as a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star followed by number one. Our next question comes from Ross Caruso with Wiz Your line is open.
Hey, guys. Sorry, I got disconnected there earlier. But I saw that you guys put us for a above normal for precip for the winter outlook, and I was wondering how you guys figured that out, as well as just north of the Ohio Valley line is kind of where you're thinking that you're going to be seeing above normal precip. For us in southeastern Ohio, we didn't really see much action last year, and I was wondering if that main driver for that reasoning you have behind the increase in precip is predominantly because of the Great Lakes and the effect that lake effect snow could have. And I was wondering if you could kind of give me an insight on what you guys are really thinking for more so the southern portion of Ohio.
Sure. This is Mike. And again, it kind of links into the way I to the last question. So the Ohio Valley is oftentimes drier than average with an El Nino, and so you know that has to do with the shift of the storm track more to the Atlantic coast. This year, with potentially the opposite phase, La Nina developing and being involved at least in what we see this winter, the storm track oftentimes will be up through the Ohio Valley. And so that will obviously, if you're dealing with low-pressure systems on storminess moving through Ohio, you'll see wetter-than-average conditions. It's not strong probabilities on the map at this point, largely because, you know, we don't yet have a La Nina. We're not seeing the all of the translation into the jet stream. We think we will, and so potentially we might become more confident when we update this forecast next month. You know, as far as lake effect snows, while we could certainly see those, I don't know if southern Ohio is, you know, maybe a bit of a reach to get down that far. I guess it can happen at times if everything lines up right. But I think we're really looking more at an enhanced storm track through the winter through that area.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, that's going to conclude our conference call today. I wanted to thank our speakers, Mike Halpert, Deputy Director of NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, and David Miskus, who's a meteorologist and drought expert at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center. The Winter Outlook news release and maps are available on NOAA.gov. If you have any follow-up questions, feel free to give me an email or a call. My email address is maureen.o'leary@noaa.gov. Or call me on my cell phone at 202-578-5257. So that concludes our briefing on the U.S. Winter Outlook. Thank you.
Thank you for your participation in today's conference. Please disconnect at this time.